making it.
Oh, come on, come on. You gotta start. No, you gotta go with an original tweet.
Oh,
dang it. I missed it by a second. All right. I tweeted the show, though. Hey, everybody. I'm Izzy Gutierrez. That's David Jacoby. June Lee. We didn't really have a whole lot of banter early on because we were just tweeting the show, so we might as well get started. Or I'm just going to watch TV behind June then.
Yeah, there's like a billion different TVs you can watch behind me.
He couldn't get his own studio,
June,
so he got
from the command
a laptop
center,
and a
yeah.
conference room.
I'm in the Seaport conference room right now. Jacoby and I are literally 100 feet away from each other, so if I wanted to, I could ditch my camera and just run into
At the end of the show, I'll walk over to your camera and say goodbye.
I'm pretty sure Kenny Pickett wants us to introduce ourselves one more time. So it's Izzy, Jacoby, and June. Welcome to Debatable. That wasn't Kenny Pickett? I'm sorry. We'll talk about that later, I guess. What do we got starting off the show there?
That's a great joke.
Brian.
We got
See
the
how
Celtics.
I just called you Brian to start off?
Yes, I appreciate that. Although Sully is also catchy. The Celtics beat the Grizzlies last night without Jaylen Brown. And they've won 13 out of 15 after a rough start to the season. So we're asking, do the Celtics belong in the conversation as the best team in the East?
I might have to step back on this conversation with you two guys. But and that's kind of what I did after what was they lost a big game early on, and early in January, I think it was. And it was just talk of, hey, these guys need to break it up. And Ime Udoka might not be the coach. And now all of a sudden, it's just like, wow, they've turned it on. They've got Robert Williams just dominating the middle, just blocking everything and finishing everything at the rim. And they are the best defensive team since, you know, since the turn of the calendar, and just seem like, you know, even without Jaylen Brown there last night, can do whatever they wanted against a Memphis Grizzlies team that's pretty darn good. And man, they really shut down Ja Morant except for a couple of stretches in that game. It was crazy impressive, June.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that has really stuck out to me over the course of the last few games, but especially last night, is that they are starting to keep the leads and not blow them, which was the biggest problem for this team, I think, in the first couple months of the season, where they were routinely getting like 15-point leads and then losing those games. And there was a couple points last night where Memphis made runs, Ja could have taken over, and they really just held their ground defensively. And I think that's obviously been the biggest jump that this team has made in the last few months. And I really want to point out that Grant Williams has been a crucial part of everything that this team has done over the course of the last few weeks, especially where, you know, he's starting to hit that three. I think he's shooting something like around one of the highest three-point percentages on like 3 attempts per game, Alvia. But he's become enough of an offensive threat from three-point where he's creating space on the rest of the floor for guys like Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart. But he's been so crucial defensively and being able to switch off of every single guy. Like, I think Zach Lowe made the comparison to PJ Tucker in his column earlier this week. And I think that comparison is really apt because, you know, you can put Grant Williams on a five, you can put Grant Williams on a one, and he's going to be able to keep up. And I think having that sort of Swiss Army knife type of defensive player on your team in the modern NBA is so crucial. And I think has been able to take the Celtics team to the next level, especially when Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are learning how to play together better and use their offensive threats to create space for other people rather than going hero ball. And so I think that the combination of seeing Grant Williams' ascendance as a top-tier kind of Swiss Army knife defensive player and Jaylen and Jason Tatum learning how to use their skill sets to create space for other people and not dominate the basketball has taken the Celtics to another level over the course of the season.
You guys hit on a lot of the key points that I'm going to expand upon. First, I'll start with Izzy. Is what you spoke about was the timeline of their season, because there was a point, like, right around Christmas where Ime Udoka, who had been on, like, everyone's list as like the next big head coach for years, it wasn't good. And it started off bad. And remember when Marcus Smart after a game was like, these guys need to learn how to pass the ball and play make. And it seemed like there was internal frustration. And I was like, this Celtics team is not only not going to like not win this year, they might be in the play-in and they might blow the whole thing up this offseason, but they've turned it all around, as you mentioned, as the calendar turned, and that has everything to do with their defense. And you remember two games ago when they had Trae Young in town, and Marcus Smart just locked him up, and he had to work so hard to get a bucket for himself. Probably should have played made for someone else, but that's not neither here nor there. And then last night, another young superstar comes into the building. They've got Ja Morant, and they kind of shut down Ja Morant. And what they've really focused on their defense, and when you have talent like Brown, who will come back, and Tatum, you're going to have offense. You can just pencil those guys in for 20-plus, maybe even 30-plus on any given night. So what they've put together is, to actually answer the question, which is rare for me, are they in the conversation for best teams in the East? Yeah, but so are five other teams.
Aren't we actually having the conversation right,
that's the thing.
Right
it's
now?
Like, so the conversation,
this is the conversation. The
it involves at least a handful, if not more hands, at least two tiny Kenny Pickett hands you need to have the conversation of best team in the East. So to answer it, yes, but really what you need are those tiny hands because you're going to need two of them to have that conversation about being the best in the East.
It's funny when you look at, like, their season, there's one guy, well, more than one guy, really, but one main guy who is not getting to sort of relish in this comeback or this evolution of the Celtics. And poor, poor Dennis Schroeder, man.
Oh.
He was so close to having an $80 million contract last off. So close. And then it's like, who is point guard starved? The Boston Celtics are point guard starved. And he's going to go there and earn back his big Nope. I mean, since he's left, like, I mean, basically Marcus Smart at the point guard spot has kind of unlocked what he means to the team and what the team needs from that position, basically. Mm-hmm. Because defensively, it starts right there with him, and, you know, they're all going to follow that. And really, it doesn't matter if the offense is going or not for Marcus Smart to play defense because that's his thing, and he's not really a shooter anyway. And then you've got the five spot locked up with, I mean, man, like, Time Lord is the sort of prototype, you know, pogo stick defender these days. Like, he gets up there so quickly. The lob passes are no look anywhere near the backboard. He can go get it. And the third thing that I've noticed mostly with the Celtics is Jason Tatum's quick decisions. Like, ooh, it used to be where he would catch the ball, kind of settle in, decide, you know, where the defense is coming from. Now it's like, okay, that first touch, he might give it up right away. It might be a second before, you know, he might look at a couple options before he's like, okay, this is my, you know, mid-post here. And so that, I don't know if that was necessarily a Marcus Smart thing or if that was, you know, a Jason Tatum just evolving type of thing, or maybe it was Udoka kind of telling him, but that's a huge difference maker because it used to be where all eyes can be on him. And if he's going like 2 for 12 for any stretch, the Celtics are just going to, you know, go away. Now that just doesn't happen as much. And so I think that was probably the biggest difference from Jason Tatum that made you sort of unlock that, hey, he can still average 28 points a game and lead this team, you know, deep into the playoffs.
Yeah, Izzy, I think you're spot on because there used to be a lot of times where Jason Tatum would get the ball and then he would just jab step three times and then he would like look around and he would do like that Kobe Bryant thing that Kobe was always really good at, but also kind of uniquely great at being able to create his own shot. Tatum's making way smarter decisions. And then you're seeing other guys off the ball, like Smart, he's taking fewer threes than he's taken in about three seasons. And so I think you're just seeing a better offensive distribution. You're seeing the ball move around a lot better. And this was the team that Brad Stevens wanted to have over the course of the last couple of seasons as a coach and is now kind of fulfilling as a general manager, where a team that can kind of switch on all possessions, you know, all five guys can kind of guard any single positions to a point. And so this is, I think, kind of the prototype of what you want in terms of a team built around modern wings in today's NBA.
They don't have 20-second timeouts anymore, man. Just go with the go here.
Okay. We've celebrated the Celtics for quite some time on this program thus far. This is getting a little too, like, pro-Celtic for me, so I just want to say this. they with this group and this group, did they ever make the NBA Finals? No. Did they make the Eastern Conference Finals a couple times? Right now, that is their ceiling with this nucleus. Do they deserve in the conversation the best team in the East? Yes. Do I see them in the NBA Finals? Absolutely not.
Wow.
Especially with this
follow-up questions by Jacoby
in the East. So we're just pouring too much love on them. I would not pick them in a series over the Heat. I wouldn't pick them in a series over the Sixers. I wouldn't pick them in a series over whatever the Nets are at any given time. And I might not even pick them in a series over the Bucks. So, like, yeah, sure, it's a great story, but I don't see them getting past the second round, and if that would
they
be
they haven't
success.
Seen all the swarming, adjusting defenses, right? They haven't really seen Jason Tatum have an entire defense, you know, devised to stop him and have him make not only quick decisions, but a bunch of right decisions in a row. And, yeah, the depth isn't necessarily there. Like, this is sort of a criticism, but also just a compliment, but, like, how is Al Horford out here still doing this? Like, that's my Dominican brother. Love that man. But, like, I was just talking to Joe Kim Noah the other day kind of randomly, and he was saying it's been years since he had the fervor, the desire, like the want to. And Al is still out here doing it at this level. That man deserves a round of applause. I don't care where his season
he
ends,
does.
But
he
that
really
man
does.
Is amazing.
Who else was Mike Miller on that team? Like, what, I forgot about Stickman was on that team.
No, that was Udonis Haslem and Mike Miller were on it, but that was Lee Humphrey and okay. Torian Green and Corey Brewer.
Corey Brewer
retired for forever. Yeah.
I think Corey Brewer scored 59 points in the G League yesterday for like the Oklahoma City Blue. I got to check on that though. I'm not sure.
But Jacoby, I think part of the point with the Celtics right now though is that they weren't going into this season expecting to be in the championship conversation necessarily. Like, I think this was, especially when they signed Schroeder and they got Josh Richardson, like, I think people were viewing this in Boston, at least from a Celtics fan perspective, as a potential transition season. And when they started off as poorly as they did, it was like, oh, maybe this is completely going into the dumpster and maybe they need to completely start over from scratch. The fact that they're even playing this well, I think, is exceeding the expectations of a lot of Celtics fans at this moment. And it makes them it makes me very optimistic as a Bostonian, like, that this team is heading in the right direction, that maybe with one or two more trades for another offensive piece, that this could be a team that can make a run at the finals in the next couple of years.
Did you give up on them
Christmas
morning, did you give up on the Celtics? Mm.
Yes, I posted a TikTok. I posted a TikTok saying that the Celtics were in a crisis.
Exactly. And now look at you. Now look at you. Spending 20 minutes undebatable just talking about how great Grant Williams is as a Swiss knife.
I do love Grant Williams with all my heart.
I don't see them getting past the Bucks, for example.
No.
Right?
But there's four teams in the East I would pick over them.
Yeah, this sort of – I mean, I could see them matching up pretty well with Philly when you consider Marcus Smart lining up with James Harden and, you know, Williams lining up with Embiid. Trouble there.
You say Robert Williams lining up with Embiid. You like that? You like that for the Celtics? You like that for the Celtics? He'll have three fouls during warm-ups.
Let Sully go ahead and interject here, and I'll think
ball.
About this.
He'll get two fouls on him. And then you get into the front court depth problem. Let's imagine that Robert Williams gets two fouls in the first 5 minutes. Then who comes in?
Al Horford, the old vet.
Okay.
What do we got, Brett?
Well, I was just going to ask because I know earlier this season a lot of people were saying that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, you know, maybe they can't win a championship together. Maybe they should break them up. Obviously, they're playing better now. So the question I have is, do you think that this is a core now that can actually win a championship, even if it's not this year, but at some point?
I mean, are we calling the core just those two? Because those two, sure, with the right
those
people.
Are the max
like,
players.
I don't know if – yeah, I don't know. I think it's a little bit of duplication of skills maybe. I don't know. Like, I look at the Sixers, and I think Tyrese Maxey is kind of the perfect wild card because he's just – he can be anywhere, right? Jaylen Brown is kind of that guy, but he still needs the ball in his hand a little bit more and for him to really get his full potential put out there. And I don't think he's happy enough being sort of the second guy, the defensive guy, and sort of the fast break guy. So I don't know. It might not be ideal, but I don't think that they need to break it up. You know what I mean? Like, I think they can try to continue to find the pieces around it. I don't think this is the time to give up on that.
I don't think there's any reason they should give up this on this. Like,
which is the exact opposite of what I said 2 months ago.
I mean, even when there was a conversation about whether or not to break up Jaylen and Jason Tatum a few months ago, what is the alternative? Like, there was no alternative that presented a better situation for the Celtics in that moment. Like, if you were to trade Jaylen Brown, like, what are the odds of getting something back or a player back who's
like a Bradley Beal?
But, is that an upgrade? Like, I'm not sure that's an upgrade. Like, I'm not sure if that's much of an upgrade, and if that's a parallel move, especially given how good Jaylen Brown has gotten on the defensive end, and the fact that he is a younger player who has kind of more room to grow. Like, he's grown every single year since he's been a rookie.
He was pretty close to leading the league in scoring with Russell Westbrook as a ball-dominant guard on his team. I would say that's a good sort of complimentary score to a ball-dominant person like Tatum. More so.
Yeah, but I'm just not sure in today's NBA, like, if you'd rather have a guy who scores, you know, 30 points a game and is maybe a downgrade defensively, or having a guy like Jaylen Brown, who obviously isn't the scorer that Bradley Beal is, but can be a little bit more versatile on the defensive end and has the length to be able to keep up with a lot more guys than I think Bradley Beal does.
I mean, we could sit there and argue this all the time. Like, with a good, great defensive cast around him, does, you know, Bradley Beal being a step down as a defensive player, does it hurt them that much? Who knows? But anyway, can't really argue that because it's not happening. I think the Celtics are going to make some noise. They'll probably end up facing the Sixers in the playoffs because that's kind of inevitable and probably lose there.
Yeah, most likely.
Is that in this conversation?
But I think the Tatum-Brown thing is like, are they redundant? Yes. Would they both flourish individually without each other? Yes. But if you're the Celtics, wing is the most important position in the NBA. You've got two of the best, probably two of the top 10. And they've never truly had a great front court or back court to complement them appropriately. So I think you can win a championship with this core. And if you were to trade one of those two, you're never going to get a good player back or a good player as effective as them. So don't do it. It's simple.
And I also think the redundancy is almost besides the point because of the way that basketball is played in the NBA today. Like, you can win in today's NBA with two wings with similar skill sets right now.
Yes.
Wait a second. If, let's just say they were traded at the beginning of this season, straight up, Bradley Beal for Jaylen Brown. Which one of you guys think, would everybody think is the better player in that trade?
Jaylen Brown. Personally, I think Jaylen Brown.
Really? I personally like Jaylen because of his defensive ability, but I know that that's...
He can cover Kevin Durant. If they play the Nets,
I think
Jaylen
going
Brown
into
will be
this
Kevin
season,
Durant.
Going into this season, it would have been probably like 60-40, 65-35, Bradley Beal would have been thought
But
of
I don't care what
player.
People say. I think Jaylen Brown's a better player than Bradley Beal.
Okay. And people forget that defense is 50% of what you do on a basketball court. Like 50% of what you do. And Jaylen Brown is a great defender who can guard 1-4.
All right. We'll talk about that next year when they're traded for each other.
Well, they switch all the time, too. The Celtics switch a lot, so that helps, having two good wings.
Izzy, I can't believe that you did not make this question about the Heat. It's about the best team in the East, and you did not.
I tweeted the show was, oh, it's shocking that the Heat win, and all of a sudden we're not talking about them as opposed to yesterday when they were all over the show after the flukiest of losses ever. So I decided I'm not going to take it out on you, Charlie. Charlie needs to be the voice who hears all this and the voice who's speaking whenever I go off here. So it's okay.
Oh, here we go. Heat time.
And look, they won.
Look, Jimmy Butler was the only one that is.
When he's not there and Kyle Lowry's not there and they can beat Mr. Durant in his comeback game. Come on now. Like, I don't think these things need to be said. Okay. I mean, that's not quite as much of a burn as you think it is. You sound like a robot. It's not as much of a burn as you think it is. In my ears, you sound like a robot. I don't know if that's the case with everybody else.
How about now?
Oh, yeah. Of course, the producer is the one with the bad audio. Usually it's one of us. And now it's the producer. Well,
yeah, he sounds like
this.
An Imperial droid right now in like the Death Star.
The sometimes you watch the Nets and you're like, God, Kevin Durant, that guy's amazing. And then you watch every other player in a Nets uniform and you're like, oh, that's right. That's why they've won two of the last 14 games or whatever it is. Like, your jaw drops when Durant has the ball. And then other times, like, oh, that's Goran Dragic. Oh, look at that. That's adorable.
And yet, if I'm the two seed, I am shaking in my sneakers
of
right
course
now.
No,
because
chance.
If they end up in that 7-8, win the first game, they're the seventh seed. It's just like, wow, what luck we have with a potentially somewhat healthy Ben Simmons, a Kyrie Irving who could maybe play in all the games maybe, and a Kevin Durant who got a month of rehab or a month of games after that injury. That would be pretty scary.
Let's just imagine a hypothetical in which it's the Bulls, right? You bring in these players, Vucevic and DeRozan and Caruso and Ball, and it works out and everything's going great. You have this great regular season, 82 games. You end up winning like whatever it is, 50, 60 of them. And then your reward for all of this, this comeback year, like this whole thing, this feel-good story, this DeRozan MVP run, your reward for all of this is you're going to have to stop one of the best scoring point guards in the league, if not the best, one of the best scorers ever, one of the best ever in Kevin Durant, and like this rejuvenated, potentially like perfect complement to those two. And by the way, they have Seth Curry who can shoot, and they have a bunch of bodies. They have Andre Drummond.
Worst case scenario for the Bulls, because not only do they not get to sort of live off of this great, refreshing regular season that they have and make even one, not even a deep playoff run, but have one series win. They're just going to make the excuse of, oh, well, we just ran into this buzzsaw who got together with these. We'll just run it back next year, and they'll probably end up with the same situation. First round and out because they didn't really improve. Worst case scenario for the Chicago Bulls. I'm really not hoping. I'm hoping for a Philly Nets first round because that would just have to be amazing television.
And, June, I'm sorry to eat up all this time, but one thing I'm really rooting for is that jockeying for 2-3 when they start losing games intentionally. Like, I can't wait for that tank off. That like game
Give
79
me the Celtics.
Or 82 tank off is always so much fun. Sorry, Chu, you go.
I also think like because of all of this, like that's why I'm optimistic about the Nets after last night, where you know the Heat are a lot deeper than the Nets are, but they were still able to keep up because Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant. Like, you know, I imagine that when Kyrie comes back and you know you have a motivated Ben Simmons, like that team is going to be really, really scary come the playoffs, especially if they have a couple games in that play-in round to kind of feel out that chemistry a little bit more. Like, I'm really optimistic about the Nets and currently their trajectory.
Hey, June, you said that the Heat were deeper than the Nets were. Last night, not so much. Can you tell me who the starting five was for the Miami Heat last night? And I'll give you one. I'll give you Duncan Robinson. Give me the other four.
Putting people on the spot like this is very rude as a coach.
No, this is fun because I have no idea if our producer is voice is actually back or if he still sounds like a robot. But I just want to ask him. Give me three of the four starters, and I took away Duncan Robinson. Okay, so there's still a super easy one in there.
Bam Adebayo was the lead scorer.
There's one. Boom, okay. Got him. Got him.
There's one. I said one. You never would have gotten through him because Omer Yurtseven was one of them. Okay,
Gabe Vincent's in there, right? We got some Struce. What else we got?
It was an interesting.
Struce had like 23 points last night.
Struce can ball, dog. Like what they've done with Yurtseven, yes. Gabe Vincent, and Struce. Like literally,
Gabe
I'm not gonna
Vincent's
lie to a microphone.
So good.
I have to like Google these players. Like when I first saw Yurtseven, I was like, who is this human being in a Heat uniform right now? Let me find out.
And then there's certain games
where
Caleb Martin looks like Tracy McGrady out there. Like apparently all Caleb Martin needed from being a G League player to being like not really a no stats all-star because he's got some stats, but being like a bench all-star is just a dose of confidence.
They were tucked away in Charlotte for a while. The Martin twins were both in Charlotte for a while, kind of tucked away. Yeah. During the era when you weren't checking for Charlotte on the league pass. But they broke up the twins. He was considered, I think, the worst of the two. I like it when the twins are on the same team. Breaking up the Morris twins and breaking up the Martin twins is just rude.
Nah, get the Martins and the Morris twins on the same team so you just have confusion all around.
I want to see how many cards I can make regarding Heat culture before I actually move.
Alabaster just texted, Tracy McGrady, someone please fry Izzy. I think that was the point, Alabaster. I think he was trying to...
I think the point is that Alabaster has not seen a Heat game in forever. Because if you squint your eyes a little bit sometimes, he looks exactly like T-Mac.
He's like Spurs Tracy McGrady.
All right. Speaking of things seeing smaller than they are or bigger than they are, let's go to the next subject.
Yeah, let's move on to the Western Conference, where the Lakers got crushed by the Clippers last night. They went down by over 30 at one point, and they've lost four games in a row. So we are asking, are you ready to bury the Lakers yet, or are you still afraid to because they have LeBron?
I'm pretty sure they're standing in the grave being asked to be buried. Like, I don't know who's not burying them yet. Like, look at the standings and look how far away they are from even, like, eighth place or seventh place. I forget which one it was. But they're, like, they are far away from anything. And now you've just got, like, an angry bunch of older players who don't really know how to handle all this. And Russell Westbrook is being super defensive. And it's frustrating, and there's no way it's going to change. But we have
a
quote on the board from Jacoby from last week.
Yes, I need a response.
Would you pick a? It says for the podcast audience, would you pick a healthy Lakers team over any other team in the Western Conference? Because I'm still there. That was last week, Jacoby.
Okay.
What?
Well, let's go through the timeline of my feelings about the Lakers. Preseason. Guaranteed Western Conference champions, most likely NBA champions, unstoppable juggernaut, historically great team, right? Start of the season. We're still working in Westbrook. This is going to take some time. AD goes down. Once AD gets back, everything's going to be fine. AD comes back. Look, AD's back. He's playing great. It's going well. AD goes out again. And then I'm like, I have some questions about this team. Then I look at where they are in the standings. I'm like, I don't really know. And then last Friday, I'm like, would I pick a healthy Lakers team or any other team in the Western Conference? They have a puncher's chance. Now, this Friday, no chance. It's over. We shouldn't even spend time talking about them. I'm more concerned about next year's Lakers than this year's Lakers. Like, they might be playing themselves out of the play-in on purpose. I don't know that, right? But it feels like it sometimes when you watch the games. It really does. Like, is it
less embarrassing if they just kind of give up and don't make it than try really hard and lose that first play-in?
Yes.
Probably.
Exactly. Like, this team is underperforming their roster, regardless of AD being in or out of it. They're underperforming the players they have on the team, and they have LeBron James orchestrating the offense, which to me is baffling, but I'm completely disagreeing with last week's Jacoby. I'm out.
Jacoby almost described the five stages of grief there in his arc on the Lakers.
Well, I'm at the final
stage. So it's interesting because now you start to wonder, like, okay, we're all impressed, crazy impressed with LeBron, right, at this age, putting up these numbers. But Is he not maybe just one of those guys now who puts up big numbers on a bad team? Like, if this was really
you just called him Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Dominant.
Wow.
You just called him
Ricky Davis?
LeBron Jamari Grant?
Actually, it was closer to Ricky Davis was the name on my mind than Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But yeah, it's just because, like, look, if you see the comparisons between people in there, I don't know if it was his age or his season, but, you know, the next closest highest points per game was, like, I think Kareem at 14 at this age or at this point in his career, and he's, like, more than doubled that. So it is, I mean, you look at the stat sheet, it's like, wow, it's crazy what LeBron's doing. Ooh, they lost by 20.
I was going to say the premise of this question was really stretching thin how much we can talk about the Lakers. Like, we're just dripping out every single inch of content that we can pull out of the disappointment of this team at this point. Because what else can you say? Like, this team, from a fundamental roster perspective, was not well put together. Everyone said that, most everyone except for Jacoby, I think, said that at the beginning of the season that this was a team that was old, that Russell Westbrook wouldn't be able to fit in with AD and LeBron. LeBron is getting older. He's a mortal human being, contrary to popular belief. And there's only so much he can do at this point with a roster that I think in theory is probably better than a lot of the early season Cavs teams, but this is also not the same LeBron who can, you know, carry a team in the same way that he has in the past.
You know who I'm a little happy for is like the Lakers home broadcast team, because they have so many national games that they're kind of checked, you know, boxed out, and they don't get to do those. So they don't have to experience most of this. Like, they're going to play, they're about to play their seventh straight nationally televised game against the Warriors tomorrow. And that game, LeBron versus Steph, has never had less appeal than it does right now, because, you know, Steph and the Warriors don't look great without Draymond, and the Lakers are just sad. Like, I agree with Charles Barkley. Like, I don't want to talk about him anymore. I kind of forgot. Like, I made that transition joke about, like, things that are bigger or small. I thought we were talking about Kenny Pickett next. I totally forgot the Lakers blew this and that we had this subject to talk about.
Brian,
this is Charles Barkley's quote. He said, I'm not talking about these damn losers.
Brian, go back a card for me with tomorrow night's game. I think the Warriors are more interesting. The Lakers are literally, like, 12 feet under the ground and buried. But, like, if you're not paying attention, right? If you're a casual NBA, if you're like, Warriors are having a great season, everything's going great, they're championship contenders. But them missing Draymond Green has been so impactful. And did you see what happened last night with Steph Curry? They're like, guess what? Wardell, Stephen Curry, unanimous MVP, flamethrower who can shoot from 40 feet. We're not going to let you touch the ball. And if you have it, we're going to get two people on you and just say someone else beat us. You right. will play. We will play 3-on-4 in the half-court offense, and it worked. And that might be a
And who's the king of taking those 4-on-3 advantages? It's Draymond Green. Like, you put Draymond Green back there, he just finds – you give the ball to him, and he'll attack 4-on-3 and find the open shooter. And so that is definitely what's missing. Now, is he that important to this team where you say as soon as he steps back in, they're back to that championship-level contender? I don't know. Like, I'm starting to wonder – you know, I think the Suns at full strength, I think, beat them. And I think three or four teams in the Eastern Conference at full strength beat them. So I just don't know, even with Draymond, if you're going to see the Warriors in the finals.
Well, I think if you have Draymond, the Warriors are an extremely hard team to beat because of everything that he does for that team from the passing standpoint, from the defensive standpoint. Like, I think he's almost making a case – his absence right now is almost making a case for him being the second most important player over the course of the entire Warriors dynasty, and him being kind of the glue of everything that holds everything together, because he does – he does all the small things at such a high level in a way that makes everyone else better. Like, he's a good enough shooter to create space for Klay Thompson and Steph. He's a good enough passer to be able to draw attention, then pass it away. He's obviously the defender that he is. I think that, you know, the trajectory of the Warrior season right now, I think, goes with whether or not Draymond Green comes back and is, you know, 85-90% of what he normally is.
Selly, by the way, when we went from Mr. Cellophane to Selly, I thought of it as a compliment, frankly, because the best teammate I've ever had in flag football, his name is Marcel, and we called him Selly. Mm. And so when I say Selly, just know it's a complete compliment. But what do you got, Selly?
Thank you. I was just going to ask June, because, June, you said that Draymond might be the second most important player over the Warriors dynasty. So that means, are you putting him ahead of KD?
Well, I mean, they won a championship without KD, so... He was a guy who – KD obviously took them over the top and made them an all-time great regular season team. But do they even get to the point where KD considers going there without Draymond Green? Ooh, I'm not sure
Draymond
that they do.
Draymond called KD from the parking lot. So that makes him – he is the reason KD – I love what you did there, June. Great work there, June. I love what you did there. Back on you,
I
Sally.
Don't think they win another championship if KD doesn't join them. But I also don't know if they win those two championships if Draymond's not on the team with KD and Steph and Klay. Probably.
Well, here's the
probably,
dirty,
but it would be a lot more difficult.
The dirty secret that no one wants to talk about, because everyone loves Klay Thompson so much, and I'm sure he'll play himself into form. But we've seen like little flashes of old Klay, but like right. It's a lot like last
it's
night, where it's like, you know, 28 minutes and about 16 points. It's like he, I mean, again, like the guy didn't play
off
basketball for 18 months.
Backboard.
I'm not trying to bury Klay Thompson like we were already burying the Lakers. I'm just saying like Klay Thompson is still playing himself into Klay yeah. Thompson form, and that will take some time because we haven't seen it yet.
And he said that. He said he's got to be better. So, yeah, don't doubt he will. What else do we have?
We have a topic about Kenny Pickett's hand size.
Hey, measured use the at tiny hands. You got to use the tiny hands to introduce that
tiny
one.
Tiny hands. I'm grabbing them right now as we speak. And
great job.
We are asking, how big a deal are Kenny Pickett's tiny little baby hands?
I mean, tiny little baby hands. So, in the NFL, they measure your hands from pinky to the edge of your thumb.
I have very small
which
hands.
I find kind of useless because, like, this finger, the pinky finger, which, by the way, I know people have, like, hitchhiker's thumb. I have hitchhiker's pinky.
Oh, bro,
like,
look at this one.
It folds up like that.
Look at that.
But
look at that.
I've got double-jointed yeah. fingers on both hands.
Oh, whoa, June.
A witch in a previous life. But that pinky means absolutely nothing. I would say it probably in all of football means absolutely nothing. Like it doesn't act like you're not even, it's not the last finger that that touches the ball when you release it. It means nothing.
I love
and
this.
So I think it's way more, and if you look at like who led the league in fumbles last year, because that's the first place you go, right? Because look, Kenny Pickett's played quarterback his whole life. Clear he can throw the ball. Clear his hands are big enough to throw it properly, right? So you worry about fumbling. Dak Prescott led the league in fumbles last year. He had 10-inch hands, okay? So I think it's useless, but I think it's funny that we have to talk about this. And I have 8.5-inch hands. So now, from now till the rest of time, I will say I could have played quarterback in the NFL.
I have teeny tiny hands. I can't even palm a basketball. It's something that truly makes me sad.
Well, but first of all, I can barely palm a basketball, and I'm 6'3". So don't
wait a second. This is the first thing I've read. Pickett apparently revealed he's been doing hand exercises to improve his measurement.
Yeah,
that seems like pseudoscience.
What? No. Not only that, is he released a thing that he's like, no. I actually was 8.78 of an inch in another measurement. So it's one of those things now. It's like a wind.
But like stretching your finger exercises.
Like, no, strike it from the record. Yeah.
That's so. I could like grip strength is one thing, but it's not going to make your hands bigger, is it? Is he going to have like tiny biceps? Like it.
I understand like when he flexes that his fingers. A quarterback's hand size is one of the variables in the equation in which you value a quarterback. How weighted is that variable though? Because I'm taking things like accuracy, arm strength, leadership, how he played football in college. Those are other variables that I might weigh more when evaluating a quarterback. And has it ever really gotten down to, listen, we have to decide between these two prospects, which one has bigger hands? It's never been a deciding factor. It's just some goofy thing.
Well,
that we
Joe Burrow had 9-inch hands and was being mocked for having small hands. And he tweeted, I was considering retirement after my baby hand, my tiny little hands, and so glad I didn't. So yeah, it clearly has, like Michael Vick also I think had 8.5-inch hands, and man, he could throw the ball without much problem. So it is ridiculously silly. I just feel bad, you know, for Kenny Pickett because it's just out there and, you know, small hands.
Also, just imagine having a job where the size of your hands is being critically examined by the national media. Like, how weird is that for that to be a thing in your profession?
You know what? I'm really proud of the three of us. I'm really proud of the three of us who are getting through this without making the obvious jokes. You know what I mean? I just want to say thank you very much, Izzy. Thank you very much, June. I know we're all thinking of them, but we're journalists, and this is a very serious program here on Debatable that airs somewhere. And I'm not going to make the jokes.
Which joke?
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, I do think it's terrible. It's ridiculous. And I will say, though, in basketball, it is something that I would measure and I would care about. Because I just remember, who was it who played for the Heat? Now he's with Portland. Played for Duke. Oh, come on. Oh man, how am I forgetting his name? No, Justice Winslow.
Oh yeah.
Justice Winslow apparently had like
he didn't just play for the Heat. He played for a lot of stops in between. Yeah, yeah.
A couple of Memphis in there. And yeah. and he was not a great finisher. Is not a great finisher. I'm not sure. I haven't really watched him that much, but people would blame his hand size on that. And Kawhi Leonard, obviously not a former Heat player. Giant hands, and everybody loves it. So NBA, yeah, it matters. That's the one profession I would say.
I also wonder, to reverse engineer this question, if Giannis was a quarterback, like we've seen Giannis hold a baseball before. If Giannis was a
too
quarterback,
thin.
Like would we be
too
talking
tall.
About his?
Ooh, you heard that one?
Too tall. Ryan Mallett.
Because you can hit the place you can hit on a quarterback is too large on him. Too tall.
Well, there you go. That's why John Elway has been failing with quarterback decisions his entire career as a GM, because he's only going by hand size at this point. He's still going to get pick number one, right?
I mean, that's the thing. It's like when it comes down to evaluating prospects, the distance between him as the number one quarterback prospect and the second quarterback prospect is not 8.5 inches. It's miles, and he's going to get picked as the first quarterback off the board.
All right, I feel like playing a game.
Me too. And we're going to play a game called What Are the Chances? And our first one we have, sorry, I have the card right here. And first
oh,
one we God, have.
Come on.
Oh, that's supposed to go with the music, Sally. Come on.
What are the chances you're rooting for Coach K in his final game at Cameron?
I'm waiting for a sounder. I can't answer the question until I hear those bells. Wow. Maybe my ears aren't working. Okay. So what are the chances you're rooting for Coach K in his final game at Cameron? That's against North Carolina, correct? That is the final home game at Cameron. I know he's got like 200-some alums or former players that are going to be there, which is pretty much half the stadium, half the arena there at Cameron. I mean, I think everybody's going to be rooting for him, right? It's not going to be a difficult choice. It's not like you've got, unless you're a crazy Tar Heels fan and you really want to ruin the finale, that there's any sort of, you know what? I'm taking it back as I'm saying it. Everybody hates Coach K, don't they?
Yeah, I think he's associated with Duke. I've never been like a Duke fan. I've rooted against Duke in most Duke experiences. However, I like drama. I cry easy. I like human emotion. I like man tears. So I feel like the best chance of like a real emotional post-game, hug after hug, crying type of vibe will come after a win. So I am rooting for Coach K, but I kind of hate Duke. So I'm on the fence. I'm giving you 50%.
Can we make sure to just put that as a quote pull out in one of the tweets? I like man tears. Jacoby, please.
I do.
No,
I cry
no other
easy.
Context.
I cry like Thank twice you. A week.
I'm also an
no.
Easy
you didn't
crier.
Say you like your own tears. You just like man tears. So
I do.
I'm also an easy crier. I want a game where like UNC looks like they're gonna pull out a win, and then Duke pulls off a miraculous comeback, and then we just see tears everywhere. Like I just want everyone crying. Like Niagara Falls and Cameron Indoor.
Just spent the last 10 seconds trying to make myself cry, and I'm not that talented. That would have been great, though. Wouldn't that have been awesome if I just started crying?
We have a mutual friend. I think you guys know Kevin Wiles. Kevin Wiles can make himself cry on command, but it's like it takes something out of him and makes him sad. So he's like sad for the next 10 minutes if you're at a bar and he does it. It's great. It's a great trick.
If I were to have like a pair of tweezers, I could just like yank on a nose.
Yeah, that
would
work.
Cry with no problem.
I think it's more like tweezers. You're using thumb and forefinger like the rest of us.
I mean, some of those are really difficult, man. Like, I don't know how strong those hairs are, but like, you feel like you got a great grip and you yank, and all you did was really curl them up.
They're much longer than you
did, like
think,
a pair
too.
Of scissors on a ribbon. I'm gonna go 51%. I think, you know, let's say it's just a heated game. Your natural emotions are gonna swing toward the guy who's never gonna do it again. And if he happens to have like a great finale, it's a lot more memorable than the other one, than the, you know, the heartbreaking finale, even though it wouldn't really be heartbreaking for a team that's, you know, ranked high. But I think if you're just not, even if you weren't a Coach K fan, just watching the final game, you've seen what he's done for Team USA, especially, you know, a lot of NBA players have an affinity for him. So I would say you'd just lean in that direction, even if you have, you know, no dog in the race.
June, before you go, can you change mine to 52? I feel like I got prices righted there.
Oh, I was going to say that I was going to prices right you guys.
Mine's
52,
actually. I'm 52 now. Yep, thank you very much.
I'm just going to make it a chronological, I'm going to make it 53.
Okay, I'm 54 now. Thank you very much. Just 54 is going to be mine. Thank you.
Can we just get an infinity symbol next to his, please? All right, what's the next game? Or the next question?
All right, next one we have. This is coming off of Darren Simmons, the Bengals special teams coach, saying he's upset with Evan McPherson for watching the Super Bowl halftime show. We are asking, what are the chances the Bengals special teams coach is right to be upset with him for watching the halftime show?
Wow, a recycled take. This is amazing. We all have to say. Now we just add the special teams coach into the question and see if it's... By the way, I don't know if you guys know this, but Jacoby and June are actually in the same building. Like, if Jacoby got up and ran into...
Oh, I'm doing that later in the show. Is, that's how we're going to finish the show.
Just making sure. So Bengals special teams coach Darren Simmons said McPherson staying on the field to watch the halftime show is, quote, a sore subject for him. Why? Like, what, why is it because they ended up losing and that's one of the negatives that they have to discuss? Because he clearly didn't have any sort of say into what the outcome of the game was. Why is it a sore subject?
Oh, I'm going the other way on this. But first of all, what's your number there, Izzy?
The Bengals special team is right to be upset. I'd give it like a, what is the number? Oh, he does his zeros, right? He does his zeros clockwise. Is that what Brian does? So I'm going to go with 10%.
I feel like you kind of have to say this if you're the special teams coach. That is, who does zeros clockwise? I've never seen that before.
It's so strange.
I like it.
We've got an upside down nine maker in Charlie and then a clockwise zero in Brian.
If you are a special teams coach, though, and your responsibility is only the kicker and the long snapper and the team loses, like, I feel like you kind of have to posture and say, like, oh, man, like, one of the only things that kind of went wrong, even though Evan McPherson was perfect the entire season pretty much, was that he went out to the halftime show. Like, what are you supposed to say?
You should be building up the legend. You should make him more confident for going into next year because he clearly had no responsibility.
I can't believe on this show, I love to party and I love hip hop and I love getting around work responsibilities. However, I completely agree with Darren Simmons on this one. Like, I really feel like it's the Super Bowl. If you go on to miss the game-winning kick and you spent halftime there, or if they call a fake and, like, you don't see it coming or you're not ready for it, like, there's a risk-reward here is not worth it. It is not worth it whatsoever because we all know kicker is the position that oftentimes the entire game comes down to, whether it's a 20-yard field goal or a 60-yard field goal. The entire thing, the entire stadium, the entire nation, the entire world, it's on your shoulders. So if there's any even an inkling that you weren't 1,000% focused on performing that and then you fail, that's a bad look for him. And it's a bad look for the special team coach. So I honestly am like 95% saying that he has a right to this. And also, Mr. McPherson, you're on the clock. DVR it. You can watch it when you get home. It's probably literally on in the locker room in the first place. So I would have to say that I agree with the boss. I agree with the square. I agree with the man. I can't believe I've been backed into this position here.
If we can go back-to-back quotes on Jacoby and just say, I like to party, I like man sweat. Just put them back-to-back.
Man tears.
My mistake. I do like to party. Those back-to-back would have been better.
I'm astounded that Jacoby went with the narcop take here.
So am I.
How did this happen? Is this the natural aging process?
It's his job, man. It's his job. It's the biggest stage he will ever be on in his career. His job is to kick. What if they're working on a fake? What if they give a green light to a fake and McPherson isn't in the conversation when they decide that? Like, you saw what happened.
So
to
you
Tony
think
Romo in the
you
playoff.
Think Simmons was in there? You think he was in the locker room? They're like, all right, guys, we're gonna work on this onside kick. Which is probably, I don't think they were kicking the ball off to start the second half, but yeah, we're going to work on this onside kick. Evan! And they couldn't find him anywhere. And it was like, fine, we're just going to have to kick it off like normal. You think that's what happened?
Was he like, I'm going to go to the bathroom real quick, guys, and like snuck out? When I saw that he was there, I had a lot of questions.
He just got lost in the crowd and just started going back on the field with the dancers and just like, oh no, where am I? I'm just going to sit back and enjoy this.
But also, Jacoby, you're missing the point that he didn't make a mistake in that game. Like, it ups the legend of Evan McPherson that he did this and he was still perfect on the field.
Evan McPherson, a huge come up in the playoffs for him. Like, a huge come up. Like, now he's like in the weapon Justin Tucker conversation. Like, week six, if you went to me, you're like, who are the Bengals kicker? I'd be like, is he on my fantasy team? No? Then I have no idea. None.
Do tears and sweat taste different? Or do you think they taste the same?
I think sweat is salty, right?
Pretty similar.
Tears
are
salty.
I don't really licked tears very often.
Oh, you never caught a tear? You've never done
oh,
that?
Oh, you know what? Yeah, no, I guess you're right.
I've done that.
I guess you're right. Salt, yeah. Sweat is a little saltier.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sally, I'm at
1%. No wonder you prefer man tears as opposed to man sweat. It's better for your health.
Tears over sweat, for sure.
What else we have?
We have one more. What are the chances? We are asking.
Did he just draw that one from bottom to top, too?
I don't remember. Ask for it next time, and I'll try again.
Make that 11%. Make that 11% for Jude.
All right, 1 sec.
I've noticed that I always give like a 0 or a 1%, so I'm trying to mix it up.
No, he went top. Okay. All right, no, he didn't go from. All right, sorry. Just needed to confirm that. Right.
So we have video here, and we are asking, what are the chances that Steph's impact on this basketball game is a good thing?
Oh, this is great. I've seen this. This is amazing. Swap. Look at this offensive possession.
Can we call Bob Ryan? Can we get Bob Ryan to watch this with us? Because I have seen this. This is unbelievable. Do we know where in the game we're at this point?
And also, why are they wearing different uniforms on the same team?
Jack Hall 0 for 3. I know, the uniforms aren't uniform. That's exactly what I said on the Instagram post. I said these uniforms are not uniform. It's very confusing.
Exactly, it's wild. Oh no, I got this again.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And they're just shaking their heads like, oh, well, nothing we can do about that. Guard them.
No.
Like, get out there.
Oh, my God.
Why are you watching him? I
so
get
good.
That Steph Curry ruined offensive basketball, but Draymond Green would be out there defending them.
This is like the best case scenario of like what YMCA games look like now, because too many people pull up from way too deep now. This is like everything goes right on like the luckiest day of the year.
But thank goodness somebody was recording that, because that still remains possible. Like, these guys practice this stuff all the time. They go wah, 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 back to back. Like, that's pretty good highlight right there. Not saying they should do that all the time, but not a bad highlight.
Well, I mean, the chances of Steph's impact on this basketball game are a good thing, yes. I'm going to say 100% chance it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. We can't put it all on Steph, because now we've got, you know, the Dames and the Trays shooting from deep as well. But I will also say this, and this is going to be, like, taking this way too serious, is, like, these kids are going to get older. And, like, we need to start considering, like, the size of the court. We need to start considering, like, the three-point line distance. Like, we need to start considering, like, is the three-point line in the right place, and is the court wide enough?
Well, can we play that again? Because that court reminded me a little bit of, like, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Like, it really only is, like, 40 feet across. And so, like, if you look, the distance between the high school three-point line and half court is, like, a step or two. It's like...
You play as much pickup as I have.
That's a normal NBA three, right?
It is
there.
Interesting
look at
how non-uniform basketball court sizes are in this nation.
Yes, it is crazy. Like, that's a normal NBA three. It's not like it's the deepest shot about. Now the one from half court is, you know, should be a 4-pointer.
Also, we should be asking about LaMelo Ball's influence on all of this too.
Paul George would call that a bad shot for sure. But yeah, LaMelo Ball's another one. I mean, look, to answer the question infinitely. Like, it's all Steph Curry's fault. For the rest of time, he's going to be blamed for anybody who takes a deep shot. Never mind that Trae Young came into the league and was doing it like crazy. And all these other guys that you mentioned. But yeah, this is all
I'm also,
Steph's fault.
I want to blame the crowd for a second. Like, they need to get way more excited than this. they're watching like six straight half quarters and they're sitting down.
The video
down,
should
like,
be shaking because the crowd goes nuts, right?
It's just like the enthusiasm from the crowd. And even the bench only stood up after the fifth straight half court shot. Like, that's what Steph Curry has ruined. Like, he has normalized this for us. Like, we look at the crowd reaction. If my kid was in this game, I'd be so excited.
There's Bob Ryan.
Oh, Robert
looking
Ryan.
Down on his computer and all of basketball, saying Steph Curry ruined the game of basketball. Speaking of not normalizing things, I would like to take full offense. Was it Charles Oakley who said that Giannis would basically struggle or be on the bench or something?
One hit,
era?
That's over.
Can we please not try to act like Giannis Antetokounmpo is a normal basketball player? Like, he's called the Greek freak, and we've gotten used to, like, two steps and a dunk from half court. Like, that is not normal. He would be an absolute alien. He would have been in Space Jam instead of Michael Jordan if he was playing in that era. So get out of here. I am not going to try and make Giannis Antetokounmpo some normal basketball player who would struggle at any time in any, like, the history of the sport.
It's also one of those things too where it's like you almost lose sight of the context that like when a basketball player, even a point guard, is on the court, they're taller than like all of us, like 99% of human beings.
Yeah, when you see Myles Garrett stand next to Steph Curry and realize, wow, like one's a monster, the other one's small in his
sport. You guys are missing out. This is just the cycle of life, because there'll be a gray-haired Giannis sitting behind some desk at some point be like, Steph Curry the fifth could never make it in my day. it's just how these things work, guys. You know,
what, like there's going to come a day, like 200 years, where people are laughing at Steph Curry the way we laugh at Bob Cousy dribbling with one hand.
Yeah, yeah. Bob Pettit was like, Charles Oakley is way too physical for my brand of basketball.
Somebody's going to develop a shot. Somebody's going to develop a shot with so much arc that it is unblockable, and they can just shoot it from anywhere, and it's going to be like Steph Curry doing it the old way. Yeah. What an idiot.
Exactly.
All right, guys, anything left?
Guys, I have an emergency.
Oh, wait,
I'll be back in 1 second. I have a quick emergency. I have a quick emergency.
Okay, yeah.
I apologize.
Sorry. I think we might have spoiled what this emergency actually is, but
shh, don't say anything.
Is there anything left on the show while Mr. Jacoby is attending to his emergency?
Well, we were going to do a quick segment of If Then.
All right, well, let's do that.
We might be able to do it with, well, I won't, yeah, don't want to spoil it. Obviously. If the Sixers look dominant against the Cavs and Heat this weekend, then blank.
Wow, it's a large step to take there. So you've got them looking dominant against the Cavs team that is lost 5 of 6. Definitely desperate. Hey, surprise! Hey, they're in the same building. So you can cut off half your phone right now if you want to and just look at the other half with the three of us on
vertical.
There. If the Sixers look dominant against the Cavs and Heat this weekend, I'm going to go ahead and proclaim them the Eastern Conference favorite. That's a huge if. That if is carrying a lot of weight in that sentence, because dominant, and I think the Miami game is definitely in Miami. I'm pretty sure Cleveland is in Philly, but... yeah, I would say then they're the favorites, comma, but that's a lot of heavy lifting on the word if. I'd like to see all of that, please.
I say that they have 2 more victories than they did before these 2 games.
Yeah. Wow, I think you're nervous because Jacoby's like in your ear.
There's also a lot of cologne in my vicinity right now.
No, ooh, what does it smell like? What does it smell like?
That's my tears. He's smelling my tears. He's smelling my tears.
Give me some of the natural odors. Like, break it down. What kind of cologne is that?
Is there a sense of
sandalwood, or is that gross? I don't even know.
It's like an all seasonal scent, I think. I think it's a year-round scent.
Wait, you do scents by season?
Is that not a thing?
You do scents by season?
Yeah, there's like summer scents.
Yeah, like the fall and winter
is
like apple and, you know.
I've been around for 43 years. This cologne is called, it's a brand of cologne called, not brand, it's a type of cologne called Oud. It's from the Middle East.
Did you say dude?
Oud, without the D. Oud.
How do you spell
it? Man, be so much better if you just wore dude cologne.
No.
Can you change that?
It's called Oud.
D-O-O-D, dude cologne?
This cologne is called Black Afghano, and my wife got it for me, and I was like, am I allowed to wear this?
Dude, what's your answer, dude?
My answer is there's no chance this happens. I mean, they might win them both, but there's no chance they dominate the Heat. Like, in Miami, please. James Harden is... No.
Can we all just take some time to watch the Nets Heat highlights behind you? Let's just turn around and watch for a little bit.
All right.
Did you see how good Bam Adebayo was last night?
30 points last night, right?
Dominant. Okay. When his team needs it.
Now we're
right,
in Big
Ten. Just a quick highlight. It was a Heat topic. All right, so what do we got with the odd couple over there? Are we going to finish the show? We're just going to count down?
We can finish it, but I do have a suggestion.
No. I want more.
This is all we got. But my suggestion for Jacoby's cologne, you can wear man tears.
Ah, yes.
Seasonal man cologne.
Tears,
really?
Yeah, that's a thing.
You've got like a summer scent and a winter scent?
You have like the fruitier scents
go more
in
like,
the summer and
yes,
then like the muskier
yes,
woody scents in the in
really?
The winter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this
a thing,
Izzy?
How did you not figure this out?
I've never heard of this in my life.
It's a thing. Yeah.
I rarely wear cologne anyway.
You get more like orangey stuff in the summers. You get more like, you know, sort of a lighter citrus, flowery in the spring. You got to go like appley and woodsy and like what are some cinnamon and all those.
Cologne,
I mean,
cologne
you ever,
smells.
You ever
like,
throw?
I've got a bit. Cologne smells like alcohol and flowers, which is why women love it so much.
All right. If you ever threw a bunch of like fruit and like cinnamon sticks and spices like in a boiling pot
I
don't know what those things are called, but they're amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are seasonal scents. Come
potpourri.
On.
Potpourri.
Have a great weekend. I'm going to get some summer cologne
now.
Season's going to change. Is this a winter or summer
scent?
It's like an all-seasonal scent.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.